The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
In the space of a day, senior leaders of Israel's most fierce enemies have been killed. Hamas leader Ismail Haniyeh was assassinated in Iran while attending the inauguration of Iranian President Masoud Pezeshkian. While in Beirut, a senior Hezbollah commander was killed after an Israeli strike struck a southern suburb in the Lebanese capital. The anxiety of a major regional war is now growing every day. And first of all, to outline the events as they happened, we're joined by Alistair Bunkle, Sky Middle East News correspondent with Sky News, as I say. And Paul Rogers will be joining us with some analysis. He's Emeritus Professor of Peace Studies at Bradford University. Alistair, good morning.
Good morning.
Can you outline the sequence of events as that news broke yesterday?
Well, first we had late yesterday evening, depending where you are in the world, but sort of middle of the evening in the Middle East, the assassination of Fuad Shukri in downtown Beirut, in southern Beirut, which is a Hezbollah stronghold. Now, this was the anticipated Israeli response to the killing of a dozen Druze children by a Hezbollah missile in the Israeli-occupied Golan Heights last weekend. Now, we knew that Israel would respond in some way. We didn't know how. We didn't know whether they would take out commanders in southern Lebanon, for example, whether they might target some Lebanese infrastructure. But their ultimate decision was to strike at a very senior Hezbollah commander. Some put him as the number two in Hezbollah. Some say he was the military commander of Hezbollah. He was certainly close to the leader, Hassan Nasrallah, and he was in a Hezbollah stronghold in southern Beirut. So that was, in and of itself, a major moment and a major moment of jeopardy for the region. And then in the early hours of the morning, about 2 a.m. in Tehran, Ismail Haniyeh, who is the political leader, the exiled political leader of Hamas, he was killed in an airstrike. Details are still unclear, but an airstrike in the house that he was staying in because he'd been for the inauguration of Iran's new president. So two major figures taken out, two enemies of Israel assassinated within about, 12 hours of each other.
Now, the message is that the Israelis will find their enemies wherever they may be. There is no safe haven for them. But it is a remarkable intelligence coup, I suppose, by Israel to know where they are and to know that they're vulnerable, because one would have thought that each of these individuals, given the current tension, would keep themselves well out of the way and beyond the Israeli reach.
It is a huge coup by Israel on both accounts. The Mossad, which is Israel's notorious foreign intelligence service, has got a long track record of carrying out high-level assassinations around the world. Israel had warned Hamas leaders that they would not be safe wherever they were. They had sort of given a guarantee to Qatar, which is where most of Hamas's political leadership normally bases itself. They'd sort of given them an assurance that nothing would happen in Qatar, but they must have seen their opportunity with Haniyeh in Tehran, and they took that opportunity. And for the Iranians and the Revolutionary Guard to know that there must be some moles within inside their organization who were able to inform the Israelis as to Haniyeh's whereabouts, and ditto when it comes to Shukri, the Hezbollah commander in Beirut, that will be very concerning for Hezbollah and for the Iranians to know that they are not secure within their own ranks.
And the question of why the Israelis would do it, because they can, is a simple answer, but it is a massive provocation. I mean, they attacked Damascus before, as we recall, but to attack Tehran directly seems to me almost like a declaration of war. They have been pegging weapons into Lebanon, so that is not such a huge escalation, although to hit the capital, Beirut, is a provocation also.
Yes, it is. I think we thought they might target Beirut. There were some suggestions they might go for Rafah Hariri Airport in Beirut. But the general feeling was that the Israelis would probably stay away from the Lebanese capital. They didn't. they have taken responsibility for the killing of Fawad Shukri. They don't always, they don't often actually put their name to these kind of events abroad, even though the finger of blame is normally pretty firmly pointed at them. But they accepted the responsibility pretty quickly for that. And their justification, whether you agree with it or not, was that Shukri was one of those behind the missile attack on the Golan Heights last weekend, but also he was a wanted man for many acts through the years. Why they decided to target Haniyeh and in Tehran and now is more open to interpretation, I would say, partly because you can't help but link it to the ceasefire talks, because Haniyeh, being the political leader of Hamas and being the most senior Hamas figure outside of Gaza, was a key figure in any mediation. He's no longer there. What does it mean for those ceasefire talks, therefore?
And therefore, the finger would seem to be pointed directly at Netanyahu, who is determined, it would appear, to frustrate the peace talks for his own political survival. The deaths of these two individuals have been confirmed by the relevant parties, by Hamas and Hezbollah?
They have. And I think what is quite significant is that initially from Iran and from the foreign ministry, we didn't have an attribution of blame. So they steered clear of pointing the finger directly at Israel. But the supreme leader, Iran's supreme leader, Ali Khamenei, has said in the last hour or so, he's blamed the Zionist regime. So he has blamed Israel. And I think that raises the prospects of a retaliation. I think if Iran wanted to, look, bear in mind, Iran has, for the last 10 months, not gone to war on behalf of Hamas. Okay, it has funded and helped and armed the likes of Hezbollah, but it has not gone all out to defend Hamas. If they wanted to stay out of this, then the easy thing to have done probably would not have blamed Israel outright, to kept some sort of opaque shroud around what happened so that they wouldn't be compelled to take out retaliation. It might be that the supreme leader feels that this is a step too far. It is humiliating for this to happen within Tehran and so soon after the inauguration of the president and to a close ally and to a senior political figure in Hamas, that maybe the Iranians might feel compelled that they have to retaliate in some form.
The Israelis have their Iron Dome air defense system. Does Tehran have the capacity to do serious damage within Israel?
Yes, it does. And just on that, just to flip it around, the other thing is if you carry out an airstrike in central Tehran, as they have done, that also exposes Iran's weakness in air defense as well as exposing holes within their own intelligence and security apparatus. As for the Israelis, well, I mean, they were tested up to a point when Iran attacked Israel back in April with almost 300 drones, crews and ballistic missiles. I say up to a point because, you know, once that attack had happened and the more we got to learn about it, a lot of countries like the Jordanians, the Americans, the British, the French, Israelis knew about this attack 72 hours before the Iranians carried it out. That is why you had American planes, British jets, French jets in the air ahead of time. And also, it's my understanding from speaking to very senior regional politicians that a lot of the ballistic missiles that the Iranians sent over weren't armed either. So it was much more of a demonstration.
It was choreographed, a set piece.
It was choreographed, It wasn't necessarily putting Israel's Iron Dome system and missile defense system, including David Sling and others, to the absolute test. To test it properly, it would have to be a surprise attack with armed ballistic missiles. And I think then it would be a real challenge for Israel to contain.
Alistair Bunkle, Sky Middle East News correspondent, thank you very much for joining us. Listening to that conversation, Paul Rogers, Emeritus Professor of Peace Studies at Bradford University. Paul, I mean, this is the most worrying development to date.
It is. I think if you look at Haniyeh first, obviously, he was, as Alistair was saying, the key political figure. He was high profile in many ways, not in the public eye very much in terms of actually sort of day to day, but not somebody who was sort of hiding away the whole time, sort of deep underground, like the military leaders in Gaza itself. And I think the basically the people in Doha, the Qatar heads, saw him as the sort of lead figure in any kind of mediation that they did. Remember, the one state in the Middle East that can maintain relations with Hamas and Israel at the same time is Qatar. And essentially, in many ways, Hania was the key person for that. And he is gone now. That at least will delay things. It will do any damage, certainly do damage to any prospects of a ceasefire, even a pause in the near future. But I think the thing was said, as in your previous discussion, this is not something realistically that Netanyahu wants. At the very least, he wants the war to continue through to the American election in the hope that essentially Trump will get in. And in some ways, that is even more important for Israel, because in many ways, Biden was very close to the Israelis, very supportive of them, had been over many years. Kamala Harris, less so. And I think essentially it is really pretty important for the Israelis to have Trump in the White House and not Harris. And so to that extent, I think this does do damage to any prospect of pressure on Netanyahu to have a short-term ceasefire. So I think that's probably the thinking there. And it may well mean some sort of response from Hamas. But what that means, what that looks like, is difficult to say.
It is inevitable that there will be some response from Hezbollah in Lebanon and some response from Tehran. What is the most likely in terms of whether or not they really want an escalation? I mean, humiliation is something they might have to swallow and not respond with almighty force.
Well, if we take Hamas first, Hamas has lost senior leaders to assassination by the Israelis in the past. There are always new people to come forward, maybe not with the same kind of experience. And certainly as far as negotiations are concerned, Haneh will have had assistance of various sorts, and those could continue if there was the will on both sides. As far as Hezbollah is concerned, I think it's rather different. The killing of Shukri is significant in many ways. It's more than many people expected, because the blunt truth is, although the killing of those 12 children on the Golan Heights was a serious thing, obviously for the families, first of all, but beyond that for the Israelis. But one has to remember, to put it very bluntly, these were not Israeli settlers were killed. They were not Jewish settlers. They were basically essentially people, children of a quite separate ethnic group. And the end result of that is it counts for less as far as the Israelis are concerned. If there'd been Israeli settler children killed, I think you would have had much stronger reaction from the Israelis at a very early stage. Two other things about Shukri. Essentially, he, as I think Alistair mentioned, had been around a long time. He was actually wanted by the Americans for being involved in the attack on the U.S. Marines right back in, what was it, 1983, when over 240 U.S. Marines were killed in a huge lorry bombing, when the Marines were there as part of a kind of peacekeeping mission. And he had, I think, something like a $3 million price on his head right through to the present time. And that means that although it's a very big figure, a very important figure, it's not going to raise huge anger at Israel from the Americans, because they will be, in many ways, pleased to see this happened. Shukri is only in his early 20s back then. He's now in his early 60s, or was in his early 60s. So that is one factor to put in. One other thing, the attack on his dwelling was in Dahir, which is a district south of the center of Beirut. That is really famous in Hezbollah circles, because it's long been one of their, probably their main urban base, but also it was a subject of intensive bombing back in the 2006 war, and it gave its name to the Dahir Doctrine, which is essentially a doctrine that the Israeli army uses. And what it amounts to is, if you're fighting an insurgency and it's not possible to destroy the insurgency, you go for the ordinary people of the country concerned. And that, of course, is what has been happening repeatedly in Gaza over the last 9 months or so. So we're in a position here where there is sort of historical links here, which are rather complicated. But even so, I'm not at all sure that Hezbollah will want to respond in a major way, or the Israelis will want to take it further, because both sides know that if there was an all-out war between them, it would be very costly for both sides, not just for Hezbollah, but for the Israelis as well.
Paul, thank you very much for joining us. Paul Rogers, Emeritus Professor of Peace Studies at Bradford University.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.